Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to DL Uncut. Our next guest is the director of the Kedron Community Health Center in South Los Angeles. Please welcome Dr. Jeffrey P. Abraham.
What's up, Doc?
Hey, Doc.
Yo, yo.
When is the new album coming out?
Yeah,
when
right,
is the album dropping?
Roll up your sleeves and get your shot.
There you go. I like it.
We ready? You gotta sing it, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, you don't. No, you don't want me to sing.
Mm-mm.
I got a chance to visit you guys about a month ago. We just came earlier this week and got
from our second
last
shot.
Week and got our second shot. What I noticed is I grew up about 4 miles from that very, look, I grew up on 135th and Avalon. We were on 42nd and Avalon. There were just all young white people and a few Asians, but primarily, like, the last time that many white people was in that part of town, the Black Dahlia, the movie, was around. It's like, like Dragnet was around. Why is there reticence in our community? Do we not know, or what is the biggest drawback to it? Because I would assume that the primary goal is to get much needed vaccines to the underprivileged community, but it didn't seem like that was what was happening right there.
Yeah, I will start by saying I don't blame anyone who rolls up their sleeves and get a shot at these life-saving essential medicines, this COVID-19 vaccine. I'm sad that people have to travel to Kedron in South LA to find their vaccine. I'm shocked that it takes grown people to finally come and visit us where you grew up, where you have seen this is medical tourism possibly at its worst.
Yes.
You should not have to wait till now to know we don't have a CVS or a Ralph's where we live, and Kedron is where we go for our care. So I do ask, please wait your turn, and also don't steal our shot. Do not steal our grandma's shot or her appointment. But the truth is, this is everyone's shot. Hashtag, this is our shot. Whether you are black or brown, white or yellow, this is everyone's shot. I ask that everyone wait their turn, though. I fought to get this vaccine into South LA for our community. So yes, it disturbs me when I see people who come and wait, but I also tell them I am proud that you are excited to get vaccinated, because we know that is a challenge. Whether you are white, brown, black, or yellow, you have legitimate questions. Your body, your health, that is your right to ask. And it is my job as your doctor to answer those questions. And that's what we do every day in South LA.
Okay, but why, and you know, excellent facility, and I'm telling you, but why is it reticence? Because why did not I see more people
who were
residents of that community? Why did not I see that? Why do you think that?
Because our people are working 2 or 3 jobs. They may not have child care. They may not have elder care. When are you going to go and wait? who is going to sit in that line with their RER camping gear, like they're going to climb K2 and Uber Eats and play Nintendo DS.
Right. That's right.
That's not our community. So what I noticed is when I opened up late hours, overnight hours, Saturday, Sunday hours, all of a sudden the people showing up were our community.
Oh, okay.
We got to meet people where our people are. Our community does not have the luxury to stand in line and roll up their sleeves. Do not confuse, you know, access for hesitancy. The truth is our community does not have time to wait. We need to get in, get out, get back to what we're doing, loving, working, playing, going to school, going to church. So that's where we're taking these vaccines.
So you don't see it as hesitancy, it's just availability or access scheduling.
You know, I think first and foremost, when we looked at 40, 50, 60% of our black and brown community claiming hesitancy, you know, what I heard was, where is my shot? No one's offered me a shot.
Right.
How dare you count that as hesitancy? Yeah. The truth is, I was never offered a shot. But when I am offered a shot, we should say, what is mRNA? What is an mRNA vaccine? Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, which is right for me? But when we take the time, we meet people where they are, we engage them, we educate them, I promise you they roll up their sleeves and they let us vaccinate them. And our community has been neglected for far too long from public health and healthcare.
Right.
And we're not going to let that keep
which is the second point I was trying to get to. The hesitancy is they came by it honest. Like everything from forced sterilization to the Tuskegee experiment to eugenics to taking genetic material like in Henrietta Lacks. To corporations like Johnson & Johnson and the whole baby powder thing. So there is a historical vantage point that we have that there is a lapse in trust between our community and communities of color and the medical apparatus.
Yeah, you know that there is a medicalization of racism that has existed in this country for decades beyond slavery. Slavery is dead. We do not have unpaid labor in this country anymore. Slavery is gone, and yet many of those remnants of systemic racism exist in our community. We will not let that stand. This is not a social experiment. This is not Tuskegee. This is not Henrietta Lacks. Trust me when I say the National Medical Association, your historically black medical society, watched, and we made sure the FDA did their job when they approved these vaccines. I would roll up our sleeves. We know you both have rolled up your sleeves. When you're offered a shot, you take that shot, whether it is Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson.
Well, okay,
Johnson.
What about people
but
I also
think we need more, wasn't, we wouldn't offer it
But
to
I think
you.
Also this was a great example of why we need more black doctors and black nurses, because I think when you, it is easier for me to trust your face when you're giving it to me because I believe in you and I know you're not going to do anything that's bad for me. And I think a lot of black people, when they walk in, whether it is at a center or anything else, and you don't see any black and brown people, I think that distrust that was already there increases.
Right. I'll tell you right now, thank you, thank you, D.L. Hughley, for coming from our community. Thank you for your parents for raising you in South L.A. this is a historically black institution, Kedron, started by 22 black psychiatrists in 1965. When our people didn't have a place to go, we would not offer it to you if it was not safe for us. And we are offering it as black and brown L.A. to black and brown L.A. That is a powerful message. If you got questions,
it is. I'm
telling
you,
ask them. Give us a chance to answer your questions. Give us a chance to offer you life-saving essential medicines. But you deserve to live just as much as rich people and white people and everybody else. And that's why we do what we do. You don't.
Man, I'm telling you, you are so dope. Because you know I hate shots. I hate. I mean, that ain't tequila. And it's.
Hey, I was there when you got.
Yeah, you saw it.
We don't need to.
No.
Let's move on. Stop it. I hate that part.
But you.
You were doing great, you son of a bitch, but now look at you.
You did it, though.
What I want to know is there is a race. We were on with Dr. Fauci last week. There is a race between vaccinating a larger percentage of the population and these variants that could take hold. And whatever happens is more than likely going to affect our community probably disproportionately. Why do we need to be vaccinated as soon as possible from a community standpoint? What is the urgency all about?
You know, what I really want your viewers, your listeners to hear, whatever you are offered, you roll up your sleeves and you get that shot. There's a lot of confusing information out there on the internet and the television and wherever else you're getting your information from. But if they were approved, we were watching and we made sure that good vaccines got through the process. All three, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson are good vaccines. And what they do is exactly what we want. They achieve equity when it comes to survivability. We want to survive COVID as much as rich people and white people. We want to survive COVID. That is period. We don't want to go to the ICU. We don't want to get hospitalized. All three of those vaccines do that. 0% of people who got these vaccines died. Very few got critically ill and required an ICU or a ventilator. Few got hospitalized. If Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson do that, then you should get whichever one of those you can get, because these variants are real. Viruses and bacteria are doing exactly what they are to do, mutate and survive, and our job is to roll up our sleeves and get that shot so
You're
when
so
they
dope,
mutate
man.
And variate, we survive.
I'm glad I went and took and brought my whole family to take a vaccine on the streets I walk and the air I breathe, and then you were there. Now, I would gladly take a shot from you, but you scared the shit out of me dressed like that. I'm telling you. I took a shot, but I hit my Rolex. I did.
I love it. They're like, oh, are you Dr. I am?
Welcome back to DL Uncut. Our next guest are comedians and Oscar-nominated writers for Judas and the Black Messiah. It's Keith and Kenny Lucas, the Lucas Brothers.
What up, gentlemen? How y'all?
Hey, hey, hey.
What's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
You guys are some funny motherfuckers. Really, I used to see you, I used to see you all around all the time. I was just in Salt Lake City and I saw your headshots.
You
guys are hysterical. But Judas and the Black Messiah is not. It didn't make me laugh one time, you motherfuckers. What is that all about?
It was just like one of those stories that were just sitting in our heads, and we were like, let's try to get it made and see if we can get it done. And it just worked out. But it's, you know, we love comedy, man. That's our...
It was so interesting, because when they were saying the Lucas Brothers wrote that, I was like, not the niggas I saw. not them niggas. Did they do that?
What?
I really did. I said, it must be some other ones.
We had to look at
this
pictures.
Shit did not make me laugh at all.
Yeah. Nothing funny about that story.
It was the most modern. It was beautiful, well-written, smart, succinct.
But it was not funny.
But it was not. I was like, you niggas, y'all niggas. Perk up, niggas. Perk up. Jesus Christ. You know what I always find interesting? They're always, with almost everybody that I find really funny and really interesting, there is a wellspring of things that surprise people. Like that you go, okay, that doesn't surprise me. This surprised me because I didn't see any... It was no let up, but I guess that time wouldn't have. There was no treacle. There was none of the treacle was cut. It was like you got even cocaine get cut. You got some out of that, but it makes sense now because some stories, the words, the impact of the moment, the action are so important that you have to be specific, I guess.
Right. No, I agree 100%. Like when you're dealing with, especially with Fred Hampton, like. You can't make mistakes. You don't want to make any mistakes.
No, right, right.
His legacy. So when you're balancing the levity of jokes versus high drama, you gotta be really delicate with
it. Right. It's so funny because black people have high drama just relating a story. Like all you have to do is look at somebody's life, and it's like Fred Hampton in this case, look at somebody's life, and all we see is the lights and, you know, the T-shirts and all the dope stuff, like all the... But all of the backdrop is modeling and dark and cloying.
Right, right. No, that's absolutely the case. I mean, it's just drama-filled and trauma-filled.
Do you think that, because I don't think they that Hollywood and the Oscars in particular really dig comedians. I don't think they do.
Yeah, it's something that all the time, man. Like, it's just kind of a disrespect a little bit, like, especially with black comedians.
Oh yeah, right? But if you win an Oscar, like Monique was very funny, but not right. Precious. I was like, oh, none of this shit's funny. I gotta, you know. So I think they think. Oh, we know you can do that. So this is such a turn that is worth looking at. This funny thing I'm used to seeing, but this dark turn is far more interesting to people, particularly in that endeavor, like in an Oscar.
Right, right. I mean, yes, there's clearly a premium on drama as opposed to comedy, and I do think that, like, when they see comedians, quote unquote, step outside of their box. They're more inclined to recognize said comedian.
But, were you uncomfortable? Were you guys uncomfortable? Well, you got two. It's two of y'all. Y'all couldn't both be uncomfortable. One of you motherfuckers could do something.
Well, they got each other. Why would they be uncomfortable?
Were you ever uncomfortable? Or did you always know that was in your wheelhouse?
Uncomfortable with the idea of going that dark, or just like making that compromise?
The whole thing. I can't think of a moment of comfort in that entire thing. So were you uncomfortable with a total departure from what you are expert at? The total departure from what we know you for?
I mean, I feel like as a comic, you know, we always dabble in pain. I mean, your comedy, at Chris Rock, all you guys are talking about some, like, really hard shit always. I mean, and we grew up on that. So it's like, we've always sort of, like, dealt with the dark stuff. So it was never a concern of mine that it would succeed. I think my biggest concern was, you know, we're dealing with this man's legacy. And if we mess that up, like, that you can't go back to Chicago. Like,
Right. There's a whole lot of reasons for that. But it's not just fucking a Fred story. I'm just telling you. What stories are you interested in? Because now there seems to be, the one thing I find about a time like this is that there people are open to hearing perspectives they weren't before, and from people they weren't necessarily in tune to before. Like, you cats are definitely set to a frequency that they are into right now. What story do you want to tell?
Man, that's a great question. I mean, there's so many stories. Like, we want to tell a story of Sharp James, right. Mayor of Newark, former mayor of Newark.
Yeah.
In the 80s and 90s.
Why? What was so interesting? Why that story? Why does that stand out of the myriad of others?
I mean, I like that transition from, like, he started as a sort of a progressive left-wing sort of politician, and then he transitions into sort of this corrupt, kind of like a crime boss, or not even a crime boss, but a machine boss, but politician in Newark. And I think it's like a fun sort of journey that you go on.
So we'll laugh a little bit in that one. Thank God, you motherfuckers. It was like listening to a Sade album. Jesus Christ. Dude, you still like gigging on the road? It's hard to do that now. But when the world opens back up, if that ever happens, you still going back out there?
Absolutely.
It's gonna be a different muscle now, because a lot of people will only have known you from this. A lot of people only know you from this muscle.
Yeah, right. I mean, the thing is, like, before it was like 22 Jump Street, people were like, oh, you guys, this is it.
Right.
And so now it's Judas. So it's like, I think it's always going to be something where they try to pigeonhole you. But the one thing that we always have is stand-up. The one thing we can
It
never changes.
Do you think about, when you're thinking of characters or thinking of stories to tell, does it start with the story? Or the person? Does it start with the things they went through, or them as individuals?
Well, with Judas, you know, obviously it all started with Hampton and, you know, his tragic death. Right. But as we did more research, we started to realize, like, oh no, the story itself is even more gripping, right? Like, he played a role in this story, but, like, when you take a step back, you realize how massive it is, how epic it is,
right?
And so, as we pulled back the layers, we realized the story itself was worthy of cinematic treatment.
You know, somebody, it was a good friend of mine, said something, and we were talking about your film, and we said a lot of the FBI had a lot of black people that that, you know, the were dual agents. They were the FBI. They got these black dudes or black women for a specific purpose. The Panthers never had no white FBI agents.
No.
It says a lot that the Panthers are gone and the Klan is still here.
Right.
It says a lot. And I think that one of the things about your story was it was so insidious that I almost got it. I almost could see how it could happen. I could see you get in trouble. It's just a little bit. You're just doing this. And all of a sudden, you're killing a dude. You're helping a dude get killed.
Right. I mean, that's like the manipulation that they employ to get their to secure their outcomes. It's like, I mean, this dude didn't know he was going to facilitate a murder. I mean, how could you know that? It's impossible to know. But he was dumb enough to believe that what he was doing was just. And I think that's the problem. They sort of played on his naivete.
You know what's funny? Believing white people get you in trouble all the time. I swear to God. I'm like, how do you believe? Like, when you look back from the moments of history, every black person go, how did that nigga believe that? Like, that's really, if we had a time machine, everybody that ever gets in trouble, so, nigga, how you believe that?
There'd be a white dude over in the corner rubbing his hands.
How do you believe that?
But it's true. But I feel like in the story, though, you can see that moment in their brain, like that bubble of, now, why did I believe that?
Why
did I ever even think this was going to work out in my favor?
But I saw him doing an interview where he looked like proud, and then right after that interview, apparently he killed himself. Like after that,
right?
It was all like he put on a front.
It was a bravado. Like, I did what I had to do, and I'm proud. What do you tell yourself? Then after that, that nigga saw that table. Well, you know what? Why not believe these niggas? I'm gonna kill myself. See, that could have been funny. You could have done that shit, and then
we wouldn't be crying when we leave.
God damn it! Shit. And then Akeem wouldn't be getting threatened by Charlamagne. Jesus Christ! You could have done that. Do you like this muscle better than stand-up, or do you like, or is it just kind of, because I think it's all the same thing. It's a source. Like, water all comes to you. Water comes to your house. You can wash dishes. You can cook. You can take a shower. Same source, different uses. Is that kind of thing, or do you just like one thing better than the other?
I think it's the faucet thing. Like, it's the same source. It's like, did you say faucet? I don't know why I said faucet.
But whatever,
it's like,
whatever.
It's that. It's like, yeah. But I think I have more fun. Yeah, because stand-up is just, you know, stand-up.
Yeah. Well, I know what. The Judas and the Black Messiah will never be a fucking ice capade. I know that shit. That shit will happen. Never be. It'll never be a fucking Disney movie. I know that shit. What are you guys working on right now?
Right now we're working on a book, man, and your book was fantastic. We want to write a book. We're working on a book. Hopefully,
you know what I knew is about you, and I hated it from the beginning. You motherfuckers are brilliant. I can't stand you sons of bitches. I can't take it. I'm gonna say something bad to one of y'all so the other one feels it. Goddamn it! I can't stand it. What is the fucking book about, you prodigies? What is the book about?
I mean, we're trying to tell a story about, you know, our journey from Newark to Hollywood, but, you know, the shit that happened in between, you know, drugs and family shit and poverty and all that shit.
Well, drugs, now that's better. Now, let's tell me about that. Everybody has a crack story. It's so great. You from Newark?
Yeah.
Of course you have a crack story. Tell us more.
You do. Brick City. You got it.
Because I always think the way I grew up and the dark things I went through really made me clear of the things. It almost gave me the ability to be a cipher, like a third eye. I could see bullshit coming from a mile away. So when you left Newark and came to Hollywood, it must have been like, fuck this shit. This is easy.
Man, it was like Hollywood's another, like, it's another level of, like, weirdness. Like, at least in Newark, you know what you're getting into.
Right.
If you go on the wrong block, shit might go down.
Right.
Manipulate the way out of it. But in Hollywood, like, it's so discreet and secretive.
Right.
Like, everything's like positive, and you're like, all right, this is too weird. Like,
would you ever live in Newark again? Would you ever do it again? Would you guys ever live in Newark again?
You know, I think about it, you know. I think about
Translation,
that
no.
Means no. No.
Nigga, have you lost your mind? Ooh, that's a good title for a book.
Have you seen Newark?
You see what happened? No, it's, I mean, because, you know, there's like everybody always wants to reconnect with where they from.
Yeah.
Like everybody wants to do, they feel like they go back to where. You don't feel like that?
They're like,
I think there are other ways to reconnect. I don't think
exactly. Necessary. Exactly. That's why they got FaceTime. Man, I'm telling you. Can't none compete with the drugs and the white woman out here. I'm telling you. Nothing. Nothing.
You know what that means.
And you motherfuckers got an Oscar coming up. Y'all going to get, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great for y'all, man. Hey, man. So final thing, the book. I want to write the foreword. I want to write the foreword for the book.
Do you really?
I promise amazing. I am. I promise I'm going to write it. You motherfuckers. You. Yes, I am going to write it. And I know it's going to sell 300,000 copies, and I'm going to be just as jealous as I am right now. Just as jealous as I am right now.
That would be an honor, man.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you guys, man. I'm telling you, you guys are very funny and very talented. Very. Thank y'all for coming on, man. Appreciate it.